Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of the Publisher Lab. This one is a little bit different because joined alongside me virtually is Whitney Wright. Whitney, welcome back to the podcast.
Yes, our first virtual one. It's exciting, a little nervous. Hopefully everything goes as planned, but you know, these things first time around always end up having hiccups, which we've already dealt with some. So I wouldn't be surprised if something else comes up, but we're hoping for the best.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this right now, that means that this is the error-free take on it, and we can all breathe a sigh of silent celebration because, as our publishers know, when you start dealing with video and virtual, you would think that with modern technology we would have gotten this all right by now, but it still seems like, it's the one challenge that the industry has yet to fully solve. So take number one. If you're listening to this, we did it.
Yeah. You think COVID would have really solved a lot of those problems.
Yeah, I know. And it's kind of interesting to me a little bit because I feel like we had this I feel like every time you have something that's simple, people always want to add things to it. Like Zoom was really great, kind of error-free. It's what made it popular. And then all of a sudden, you know, they had to grow their business. And so that meant adding features and technologies. And yeah, now Zoom is not near as good as it was in the beginning.
Well, maybe they'll like start using, you know, AI to, or they probably already are.
If they could use AI to CBD infuse it with something, maybe we'd really be onto something. Then Google would be interested.
Well, we have some AI in Google News today, so we're right.
I know.
We're aiming for. So we'll get to that. So we're going to talk a little bit about generative AI and authenticity. And then Microsoft is unveiling AI chat monetization for digital partners. And then, of course, Google I/O was today. And we're going to briefly discuss what they talked about as far as Google search. We won't cover the entire presentation, but we will touch on what they talked about with Google search. So to start off, we are talking about generative AI is forcing us to rethink what it means to be authentic. And this is from What's New in Publishing. So with the rise of AI, there is an authenticity crisis. You know, you can't tell what's real, what's not, what's human made, what's robot made. And I think what we're going to continue to find as AI develops is that authenticity matters. Neuroscience, this is from What's New in Publishing, like I said, but they had linked to a research study that shows that neuroscience has shown that believing a piece of art is authentic and it will activate the brain's reward centers in ways that viewing something you've been told is a forgery won't. So people like authenticity. The brain likes authenticity. And it also matters because it reinforces trust. Back before AI, you know, like a couple months ago, there used to be a general assumption that it required skill to create new original content and, you know, effort. And this isn't necessarily the case anymore. Generative AI thrives on people's reliance on something called categorical authenticity by producing material that looks like the real thing. So an example that they gave was if you're in Japan and you go to a place that offers authentic Neapolitan pizza, you know it's not from Naples, but it's very much like the real thing. So people need to stay up to speed on these technologies to know what is possible and what isn't. And AI can be used to expand the boundaries of what is possible and create an interesting, worthwhile, and authentic content still.
This concept is something that I've been using as examples a lot because it's I'm growingly impressed and also sort of like unimpressed each day with the capabilities of the modern large language models. So ChatGPT being one that pretty much everybody is familiar with. I've heard it recently called they're the world's greatest plagiarism machines. I think that's a very slanted sort of like take on it, but there is some like truth and some accuracy to it. And I think a lot of that stems from the fact that like, if you think about it, all the information that's being fed to these large language models is basically what's available on the internet or databases, all human inputted material. So at some point it is just really regurgitating information, even if it's organizing. Now, what's impressive to all of us is the fact that these things are able to produce things that normally take humans a long time or very complex. So we've talked in previous podcasts about like cloning people or cloning voices or even producing like unique content like you mentioned earlier. But I think one of the things that sticks out to me is the human inference is so difficult, because I read an article earlier this week on financial models, and they were saying that they're really good, AI is really good at predicting market moves and things like that, but it's not perfect because it doesn't really know how to infer the context of some of the information. So like if a executive from a public company sold a bunch of their stock, the AI was not weighting that as a bad signal. And the reason why is because sometimes it couldn't figure out how much stock was sold. And it was like, well, that's important for me to know. But you know, traditionally this has been something that's viewed as a bad signal in the markets, right? If you have an executive at a company selling a bunch of their stock, maybe the company's not doing well. And I think it's about the same thing with AI, where, I mean, we have a lot of this information today. You know, if where you're in Indiana right now, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so where what town are you in?
Syracuse.
Syracuse. Is it big? I'm not really familiar.
Nope, it's 3,000 people.
3,000. That's like my hometown.
Yeah.
And so, do you think you can get an Uber there?
I don't know if you can. I don't think you can.
You probably can't, right?
No, I've never tried, but I really don't. I don't know where they'd come from.
Yeah, it's a good question. if you put into Google Maps how to get from Syracuse to Indianapolis, it's going to give you the directions, right? And you can pick like how you're going to go. But the information that you might need if you were stranded there, for example, might be like, what's the best way to go, right? And the best way to go, it's really going to depend on a lot of different things, where it's like, you know, I remember being in Brazil a few years ago and Google Maps telling me one way to go from Rio to from Copacabana Beach in Rio to Ipanema. And, you know, the way that it was going to take you would get you robbed. And then the taxis, it said, were going to take a certain amount of time. And it was really long because you have to go all the way around the coast to be safe. And then on the other side of that, you also have the fact that the taxis, the rates that they show on there are really, really expensive. But if you go up to the taxi drivers, and everything in Brazil is very social, they're a very social culture. So you might say, well, hey, I like your shirt. Are you an Atletico fan? Because maybe the guy's got like a soccer shirt on. That's his team. And he's like, yeah. So you make a connection with the guy. Now you're friends. And then he'll drive you over there for $5 on a scooter, and it'll take you half the time. Now, that's information that's only from experience. So you can think a travel blogger might be able to give you that information, but you know, a chatbot, even if it just steals information from a travel blogger, is not going to be able to give you the best information on that. So a lot of the information that we still need is wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that this is where AI is really short right now. And I think, yeah, I think when we rethink what it means to be authentic, this is sort of what I think about is where is it? I mean, like wisdom is the real value of different types of content. I think that there is a lot of low value content out there that probably provides nothing other than just like a regurgitation of information that's already available.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what is going to make the difference here in the future is, you know, people want answers. I think we've probably talked about this, but, you know, if people want answers to what's the cheapest gas in Syracuse, like, you can look that up on, I'm sure ChatGPT could give you the answer if you typed it in, because it's just going to search the web real fast and give you the answer. But if I wanted to know, like, who the friendliest gas station clerk is? This is a bad. I'm turning into Tyler. This is a bad example. if you wanted
like
to find out
which gas station is probably like the cleanest or like the most likely to have snacks.
Yeah, exactly. Like ChatGPT could tell you that, but wouldn't you rather hear from a local who lives here and probably has spent like their family's been here for generations? They could probably tell you the whole history of all the gas stations in the town. And I that could be way more valuable than just you know, asking ChatGPT and then it just kind of scraped content from the internet and gave it to you. But it could not, it could be completely off and not authentic to the actual experience of being in lovely Syracuse, Indiana.
And if, you know, just pure data, if we think about information as data and not necessarily having to be numerical, you know, like ESPN, you know, all, every sports media conglomerate you can imagine, they wouldn't exist if the only thing you wanted to know about a sport was basically like to watch it or what happened, meaning like what was the score, right? But like sports news, rumors, all that kind of stuff, it's a huge industry because people want to know more than just like the information. They want sort of like the human components of it, where it's like, you know, I saw an article the other day and it was like, which draft picks from this year's NFL draft are most likely to be busts, you know? And like ChatGPT could probably produce a pretty decent article on that, but it's like, I don't really want, like, the point of reading something like that is not to get information, it's to get an opinion or to get a perspective. And mm-hmm. I still think that humans are going to provide better perspectives. And like you said earlier about the, you know, the forgery and the brain kind of knowing authentic versus unauthentic. If you lie to me and you tell me a machine wrote it, like maybe I'm okay with that. But if I know a machine is telling me who's most likely to be a bust, I'm like, ah, what do you know? Give me like Jerry, the guy that used to be a punter for the Colts that's like been retired for 6 years. You know, it's like he knows. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that this article makes a good point that it's not saying that, you know, completely write off AI. AI can still be used to create, you know, authentic content, but it just needs to be used in like an intelligent way that isn't, I guess, taking advantage of the fact that you can have a robot write all of your content if you would like to.
Yeah, I agree.
So our next topic is, again, about AI chat, but it's Microsoft is unveiling AI chat monetization for digital partners. This is from Search Engine Journal. So Microsoft introduced the Ads for Chat API this week. It's an advertising solution designed to monetize AI chat experiences. So according to the announcement, the Ads for Chat API would create native advertising experiences that benefit partners, consumers, and advertisers. And Kaya Sainsbury Carter, the corporate VP of Microsoft Advertising, said the value proposition that we see for publishers specifically as we go forward is driving more traffic and clicks, not less, and ensuring that publishers and partners earn more money. And so they kind of laid out how it works. They, using the Ads for Chat API, partners choose the ad format's audiences prefer to integrate within chat content. It focuses on delivering ads that blend in with the platform's content and user experience, so it's not, you know, wonky and messing up the experience for everyone. And the advertising experience aligns with the platform's native environment. So with over 100 million daily active users on Bing, Microsoft could offer publishers a profitable new revenue stream and an expanded ad experience or ad audience to advertisers. So I guess this isn't surprising that they are starting to integrate ways to do advertising within chat GPT and AI chat, but what do you think about this? Is this the way to go?
Yeah, I think the future is going to be determined by so many variables. It's really hard to say exactly it's going to be this final form, but I do believe that whether we're looking at this through search engines or chat, you know, like AI, you know, platforms or models that allow people to ask questions, or like a ChatGPT, or like platforms that allow like more multi-layered sort of like all-encompassing things like image generation, whatever. I think what we're gonna find is that the legal disruption that AI is gonna bring in the space is clearly copyright. I mentioned before, people are already calling them like plagiarism machines. And because of that, what you're gonna find is that all the major players are going to try to find ways to mitigate that risk. So that means being able to have permission to whatever content is available. And so for publishers, this is a really good opportunity. I would say it's like a chance at a new deal for publishers, if you will. And, you know, sort of the more actionable step, I think, for publishers here is I would look into making sure that your content is like has good markup. I would look into things like Markdown and stuff like that and see how easily you can convert your content today to something like a Markdown format. You don't have to do that, but it'll tell you a lot about how well your content is formatted for something like a chatbot or an AI engine or something like that, like categories being set, descriptions, titles, A lot of the kind of stuff that you would traditionally think of with SEO, but probably a little bit more. That kind of material being able to get extracted from your site in a JSON format or YAML or something like that makes it really, really easy for a chatbot to be able to see like what content is about and then extract the parts that it needs. And you would say like, well, why would I want that? And the answer is because there may be an opportunity in the future where the majority of sites aren't doing this. And so the content has to come from someplace, which means it'll get licensed. So in the same way that you may display ads today or, make money off of, affiliate link clicks or something like that, you can almost think of your content like the affiliate link that would display inside of a search result or inside of a chat platform or, something along those lines. And that means that, in the same way that music works today, if you're a television show and you want to use a Harry Styles, how do you like that reference? If you want to use a Harry Styles song in your television show, you'd have to license and provide a royalty in exchange for using his music. Now, his music is its own art, right? Like it's its own content. You can enjoy it on its own. But they want to use it as a part of this like larger amalgamation of, some kind of show or multimedia or whatever. So you license it to use it as a component. And I think that could be where publishers start seeing a lot of their content being monetizable in the future is, sure, you can have an audience that comes to your website. But at the same time, you may have pieces of your content or media on your site that's used inside of many other platforms and you get paid for it. And I think at first it may be a limited number of sites and publishers that are really set up to do that. So it could be a gold rush.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the article said that they're, testing it out on Microsoft partners and kind of getting their feedback and ideas. But it's something I think that's could definitely be valuable for publishers, especially if this is kind of the direction that at least things are going for now. I don't think it'll always be the way that this is. Maybe always having chatbots and then giving, content snippets and advertising and stuff. I think that, things are going to change and evolve over time. But I think that if this is what's happening, like you said, like, it's like, why would you want that? But it's kind of like, why wouldn't you, if you can have both ways, like, why not both? Why not have people able to get to your website, but also have your content available for like ChatGPT to pull from? And then have like advertising as a part of that as well.
And I understand the scariness of that as a publisher where you want a certain amount of control over how your content is used. But if you think about it, it's like we're just conditioned right now in a lot of cases in the publishing space to be used to Google. But Google's been stealing stuff and putting it into Knowledge Graph in some cases without any attribution for a long time. And they've been indexing content and putting it into Google Images. So this is already happening. It just may give you more parties to do it with. And maybe you're going to be able to extract actual money from your content being displayed as opposed to like this kind of like sort of like proxy paid for your content where it's like Google is both giving your content away for free and then also at the same time giving you the ability to monetize it with their ads. Quite a great little business there that's definitely not a monopoly. I love my friends at Google, so I will say that, but I will say that this is an opportunity. If you look at, everything in our entire industry has evolved into what it is. It's not like I don't buy into any of the conspiracies that might be out there around like, oh, Google very specifically created this like, massive antitrust. Some of this stuff is just, it's by happenstance. You try to create a great business and you end up being dominant. And then, people are people and incentives drive a lot of behaviors. But at the end of the day, I think it's good to be comfortable with change right now.
Definitely.
Hey there, it's Anthony Moore, the digital content manager here at Ezoic. And if you're thinking about signing up one or more of your websites onto Ezoic Ads, now is a perfect time to do that. Here's why. When you sign up for Ezoic Ads, you're going to have access to a ton of awesome stuff. You're going to have access to the Google Ads Exchange. You're going to have access to a wider range of advertisers, more control over the ads that are on your sites. You can have advanced targeting options, much more ad revenue potential. There's so much more you can do on Ezoic Ads. Sign up today and join thousands of other publishers who are seeing an average monthly revenue increase of 36%. Sign up today.
And another big change coming is Google Search. So I'm sure many publishers are aware that Google I/O happened earlier this morning. And we are going to chat a little bit just about the search section of that. And yesterday, Search Engine Land and the Washington or Wall Street. What article is that? Wall Street Journal? I think what's the article that you posted in Slack? It was Wall Street Journal, right?
It's Wall Street Journal.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. I don't know why
it was actually I shared it as a PDF because it was sent to us for feedback and it hadn't been published yet. I actually still don't know if it's been published. Ooh. So, but we can reference
it. It has been
published by now.
It has, yeah, it's been published. I saw. I made sure. So this is from a bunch of different sources, but Google I/O, like I said, happened today. It was the annual developer conference. And they announced new AI features to search in a project that they have been calling Project Magi. And it's a team of more than 160 Googlers that are working full time on this project. And it may be available to a subset of users in the next month. Google will have a place in its search results to allow you to have conversations with its search engine. And we can probably throw some images. I took some screenshots from the presentation today. Just to kind of get a visual. I hope that's allowed. I don't know. I didn't really check.
There'll be plenty because I think in their press kit, they probably released the slides.
That's what I figured. So the way that it shows up on the screen is you type in a question or something to Google, and at the top is this AI generated answer. And then they had like the three most reputable sources on it. So the example that they gave was, you know, you can ask Google Search specifically, or you will be able to ask Google Search specifically, like, what's better for a family with kids under three and a dog, Bryce Canyon or Arches? They want to know which park is better. And so it delivers an answer and, you know, tells them that although both are kid friendly, that Bryce has some trails for dogs. And then the three reputable sources were the National Park Service and, you know, the park's different websites. And then underneath the AI content was, you know, all like websites listed how you would normally see them. So it's like a little bit different, but they're still giving sources. They're still, you know, they're not like completely getting rid of like website links and stuff. And they also had like a shopping one where there was like shopping ads at the top, like we're kind of used to. And then AI had generated, I think they were like looking for a specific dress for a wedding in Miami or something like that. So Google, yeah. Google's AI gave a, you know, gave a bunch of examples and shopping things. But then there was also, you know, the actual Google shop underneath the AI. So they're like, yeah. The way it's going to be is it's just going to like, it's going to integrate both. It was actually really cool. I thought it was really cool. And it's going to give top authorities, you know, the top section still, you're still going to have your content at the top there. And, but you can like follow up with the search and it'll know that you're still talking about what you asked questions about before. It was like, it was really interesting. Did you look at that at all?
Yeah, I did. Even though I said I wasn't going to, I did. I was interested.
you have to peep in a little bit.
Yeah, well, to me, you know, one of the things that I like most, it's a very sort of like novel feature of ChatGPT, but what I really like is that, you know, yesterday I was asking it, I was working on a presentation, believe it or not, one that you may be familiar with. And in the presentation, I was looking for examples of, it's great for research because I wanted examples of a time that somebody was able to win a negotiation because they knew something that everybody else didn't know, right? So I'm like searching that and it was giving me an example. I'm like, ah, I hate that one. Give me another one. Give me another one. Give me another one that uses a historical example. Give me another one with a historical example in the US. And it's like, I didn't want to have to retype, copy, paste. It's like, it just, it was bringing over what it learned from the chat previously. So that is a novel feature that doesn't require AI that I think is really great for search engines. So that I am a fan of. And I was sort of impressed with the interfaces from the standpoint of like what I've seen so far is from everyone else is basically like, how do I make a search engine? Like, how do I jam in like ChatGPT as a widget or like make a search engine ChatGPT? And it's like, they're different. I want different things. I still want a list of websites for most of the things that I search today, me personally. It's not the same for everybody, but for me, that's, I'm kind of looking and researching. And so I did like some of it, where I still think that we're going to find that, there's going to be, a lot of issues, especially when it comes to like reliability of sources, getting outside of the whole, like, arbiters of truth, like discussions and stuff like that. It's more of like, you know, you think about something like health information, where it's like, if you want to know if something for, you know, like, let's say, fasting, right? So like, I like to do fasting in the mornings. If that's something that I wanted to find information on, well, the most, I guess, like, world leading authority on health would be like the World Health Organization, right? I don't give a shit what the World Health Organization says about fasting. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not counting on that. They're a, this giant, like, bureaucratic behemoth, especially in health news and information. It's like, I want information from like maybe researchers or like people that have studied this particular aspect of health that are maybe in the health and wellness space, not necessarily like a government authority. And especially when you look around the world globally, it's like you have a lot of state-sponsored news and organizations that arguably you don't want to be your reliable source of information. Sometimes you want independent, you know, like you want civilian information in a lot of respects. So I do think that that's where, you know, like I think they've been good about this so far. And I think a lot of these platforms have realized there's a lot of limitations to it. But I'd like dial back any concerns that people have about this being something about, you know, the platforms choosing favorites. It's in Google's best interest and has been for a long time to increase the number of sources that they have of content and information, not consolidate it.
I agree. And like, I think this kind of goes back to our first topic is that authenticity, that authoritativeness. You know, you and Anthony talked about EAT last week. Experience is so important. And so even though this is kind of, I know that like, I'm sure some publishers are worried about or were worried about before the presentation, kind of like, well, what does AI in Google search look like? Is it gonna, you know, because they originally, the kind of the articles before Google I/O, they were talking about like, we're getting, you know, the 10 blue links are gone. And I mean, you know, I'm sure there was like a panic. It was just like, what does it mean? But I think today, kind of seeing how they are setting it up or have it set up to release, it still gives like a lot of information from publishers and like, you know, it doesn't just like completely eradicate the need for publishers anymore. Like, like you said, people want experience and people do want to do further research. Like maybe they got their answer to which park is better, but now you want to do research into the actual park. Like you're going to go to the park's website. You're probably going to visit maybe someone who's been to the park before and like, you know, maybe they're a traveling set of parents or something and they have kids and you want to know how their experience went at Bryce Canyon with their kids. Like you're still going to want that experience from people. And so I think this kind of visual, kind of more personalized search engine that is going to be released isn't, like you said, you can dial back your concerns. I think it's just different. It's not necessarily going to be worse.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right on that. And I think, you know, when I think about sort of the nature of where we're at right now, I think the riskiest thing that you could do as a publisher is to put your head down and ignore everything that's been happening. And basically, honestly, I think creating evergreen content for search engines is the one way that you're guaranteed to fail over the next 3 to 5 years. And that's because I think that that's going to be not anything like what it's been. And that's going to be hard for publishers because that has been the tried and true method for success for the longest time. But I would implore you, and this has not been just me, Google and many, many others have been saying this for years, but make content for your audiences. Like, know what your audiences want. You should be able to make content that at least some portion of your audience over time comes to you directly for. And if they're not, the chances of you being disrupted in some form or fashion are very great.
Agreed. Well, was there anything else? Yeah. Was there anything else, especially from like Google I/O or, you know, anything we talked about that you wanted to let publishers know about?
I don't think so. I mean, I know that you'll be in London next week. By the time people hear this podcast, if you're going to the affiliate gathering, we'll have a cohort of people and individuals there, and make sure you stop by and say hi to Whitney and some of the other members of the crew. Anything else to add on that front?
We are hosting a workshop. If you're going to affiliate gathering, we're hosting a workshop 3 different times. You can find it on the affiliate gathering website. We are going to be talking about AI in video. So if you are interested in learning about that, make sure and sign up for one of the workshop times.
Yeah. And I know, my close friend and associate John Cole will be speaking on the first day, and he's got a really great presentation that I think is a prelude to, or I guess I've preluded to, many of the topics that he's going to be talking about on there, which is basically like why all publishers doing the same thing that they've been doing over, you know, the last probably 10 years is probably the riskiest thing you could do. And then basically the 3 things that I think publishers should do right now to basically like take advantage of everything. I think there's going to be some big time winners and losers over the next 3 to 4 years. And I think publishers can be winners.
Definitely. I definitely agree. I believe there's still tickets left to Affiliate Gathering. If you are in the UK or, you know, in Europe and you want to hop over, it's next Friday, May 19th, and it's in York. So we hope to see some of you there. And if you would like to leave the Publisher Lab comments or suggestions, topic, you know, things you'd like us to talk about, you can go to publisherlab.org, and we have a spot there that you can leave us something. You can go on our YouTube channel and you can watch the podcast if you prefer that, and leave us comments, you know, give us a thumbs up, subscribe. You can find us on any platform that has podcasts. And this has been interesting. This has been like, this has been a good time. You know, I think, yeah, like I said, we had some little road bumps in the beginning, but I'm really hoping that, you know, first time's the charm here.
Yeah, me too. And if you listen to this time, give us some feedback. And if you thought, hey, you guys did a good job, let us know too. That's always nice. You don't always get those, especially in publishing. But I think our listeners are particularly adept and understand sort of like, all the behind the scenes stuff that's hurdles and roadblocks. And yeah, it's always nice to get a show under the belt, scot-free. Fingers crossed.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think we mentioned this before. Once we know that this worked and everything went fine and, you know, we're kind of settled in, we will let you know what our setup is and how this is working. And, you know, if you have any tips for us, if you're a podcaster that does, you know, a podcast from afar with another person, give us tips for remote podcasting. We would love to hear it.
Yeah.
This has been another episode of the Publisher Lab.